to the Amazing Women in History podcast. Today, I wanted to share with you a couple of my favorite blog posts from the Amazing Women in History blog on weird connections in women's history. You might know already that suffragists fought for the right to vote around the turn of the 20th century. But did you know that the growing movement for women's rights was connected to two other big changes around that time? Bicycles and prohibition. Yeah, weird, right? I will tell you how it's all connected in this episode. And just a heads up that while there were suffragists fighting for the right to vote around the world, this podcast is focused mainly on United States history. Firstly, why did Victorian men hate women on bicycles? In the late Victorian era, the popularity of bicycling was at an all-time high. New bicycle designs were safer, more comfortable, and cheaper than ever. So it's no surprise that more and more men and women were taking up the sport, and the new woman and her bicycle became a 19th century phenomenon. What is surprising about the bicycle craze of the 1890s is the big effect it had on the women's liberation movement. Cycling opened up a new world of freedom for upper and middle class women who had been mainly confined to staying at home. The so-called new woman and her bicycle, a strong and independent woman who rode bicycles and wore cycling costumes like bloomers, became a symbol of gender equality and redefined femininity going into the 20th century. In the 19th century, society held a view of separate spheres for men and women. Based on their biological and God-given nature, women were thought to belong in the private sphere of housekeeping, child-rearing, and domesticity, while men belonged in the public sphere, which included politics, law, and commerce. The ideal of the true woman in the Victorian era was pious, pure, submissive, and domestic. She would not aspire to leave the home for work or pleasure. For middle and upper class women, homemaker was really the only role society allotted to them. With this attitude, combined with the ultra modest dress at the time, you can see how an upper class woman riding around on a bicycle would be considered pretty scandalous. Now, various forms of the bicycle were invented throughout the 19th century, but most of those were dangerous to ride and considered more of a novelty than a method of transportation. The riders of these expensive early bicycles were mostly rich young men. High-wheel bicycles of the early 19th century, called penny farthings, were thought to be inappropriate for ladies. The 1880s brought the invention of the safety bicycle, which exploded in popularity. This new design used a chain drive like modern bikes and allowed the rider to sit much closer to the ground so that it was easier to stop. Through this decade and the next, mass production and competition brought lower prices. A quality bicycle could be bought for less than $100, which was about 6 months' salary at the time, and the bicycle's popularity soared. By 1890, the Cyclist Touring Club in Britain had 60,000 members, and 20,000 of those were women. The new safety bicycle brought women unprecedented freedom and independence. Women who had been practically confined to their homes could now easily go anywhere they wanted anytime, without having to be dependent on men. Women such as the suffragist Amelia Bloomer had been trying since the 1850s to promote dress reform for women, but had not been able to stand against the demands of fashion at the time. But now that bicycles were so popular, women were turning to more practical dress. The restrictive corsets and heavy layered skirts that were fashionable at the time made it almost impossible to ride a bicycle. So women finally started wearing bloomers, shorter dresses, and looser or no corsets. Women on bicycles were highly visible as they rode around outside, and so they began to serve as a symbol for freedom and independence for all women. Though most of these women cyclists probably didn't have women's liberation on their minds, their activity was still considered by many to be a challenge to the current social order. In the 1880s and 90s, the new woman and her bicycle became a common subject of satire and caricature. Critics thought that they were tearing apart society by abandoning their household and husbands and children. It was suggested that any woman who wore bloomers and rode bicycles must be a loose woman, a prostitute, or a lesbian. Doctors warned women that bicycling was bad for their health, that women were too fragile and sensitive for the exertion of bike riding, and that habitual bike riding could damage their internal organs and lead to infertility or even death. Members of the clergy even preached against women riding bicycles and called bloomers outrageous and an abomination. Still, the bicycle craze continued until the rise of cars in the early 20th century, when the bicycle's popularity steadily started declining. The effects of women's newfound freedom and practical dress reform redefined femininity for a generation and helped to spur the growth of the feminist movement. So here's another strange connection with suffrage and women's rights in the 19th century is the temperance movement, which led to prohibition in the early 20th century. So it might seem like women's rights and alcohol prohibition would be on opposite sides of the political spectrum. But did you know that throughout the 19th and early 20th centuries, they were both considered radical causes? And many suffragists, in addition to their work for women's rights, were also part of the temperance movement, which advocated for reduced or no alcohol consumption. Both movements actually culminated in the very same year, in 1920, when the 18th Amendment prohibiting alcohol came into effect, and the 19th Amendment enfranchising women was ratified. So how was this women's suffrage movement connected to the temperance movement? Let's take a look at how it started. As the United States developed, its people started turning from light alcoholic beverages like beer and hard cider to stronger beverages like rum and whiskey as they became much cheaper. The production of rum, especially, was part of the whole slave trade. Slaves from Africa were brought to the West Indies to grow sugar, which was used to make rum, and that's why it started to become available so cheaply. What many citizens saw as an epidemic of alcoholism followed. Remember that at this time, women had pretty much no rights. A woman was legally not considered a person and was considered to be the property of her father or her husband. So what would happen if a woman got married to a man who turned out to be an alcoholic? If he spent all of their money on booze or even became violent? Legally, there was no escape for her. So what could women do? All they could do at the time was to ask men to stop drinking so much. And that's how the rise of cheap alcohol and growing alcoholism led to the growth of the women's temperance movement in the early 19th century. Advocates for temperance linked the consumption of alcohol with greater issues like violent crime, poverty, unemployment, and domestic violence. Though at first campaigning for moderation, the movement became more radical after the Civil War and began calling for complete prohibition of all alcohol. National organizations such as the Anti-Saloon League and the Women's Christian Temperance Union grew quickly, and by the late 19th century became very powerful in lobbying for prohibition legislation. Around the turn of the 20th century, Western society still overwhelmingly believed in biological determinism, that men and women had different inherent natures determined by their respective biology. Women were thought to be morally superior to men by nature, and many advocates for women's suffrage argued that women should have the vote because of this. Advocates for temperance wanted women to have the vote because it was believed that they would vote for prohibition due to their moral superiority. Many breweries, on the other hand, lobbied against the suffrage movement out of fear of losing their business to prohibition. Groups such as the Women's Christian Temperance Union, founded in 1873, linked together the causes of Christianity, temperance, and social reform. As a religious organization, the WCTU was seen as a more ladylike and respectable way for women to become politically involved in the struggle for suffrage. Since each local chapter of the WCTU was autonomous, local leaders had the freedom to act on issues such as women's suffrage under the banner of a respectable religious organization. Many of the most famous early feminists and women's suffrage advocates were also supporters of prohibition. For example, the WCTU's second president, Frances Willard, broadened the organization's activism with her slogan, "Do Everything." A feminist and suffragist, Frances Willard fought not only for temperance and women's suffrage, but for other radical causes such as workers' unions, federal aid for education, and an 8-hour workday, which were all considered very radical at the time. Perhaps the most famous pair of United States suffragists, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, were temperance activists before they became involved in the women's suffrage movement. Susan B. Anthony, before becoming a famous speaker on women's rights, gave her first speech at a Daughters of Temperance dinner. Together, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton co-founded the Women's State Temperance Society in 1852, the first women's state temperance society in America. Though the temperance movement mostly died out after the repeal of the 18th Amendment in 1933, adherence to the movement continue to exist to this day. For example, the Women's Christian Temperance Union still fights for social reform, though they are now considered extremely conservative in their current stance against abortion rights and same-sex marriage. The feminist movement, on the other hand, is now mainly considered a liberal cause. This strange alliance, though it lasted almost a century, died out soon after the death of prohibition as each movement went its separate way. Thank you so much for listening to the Amazing Women in History podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on Substack and YouTube so you don't miss out on any content. And you can read hundreds of short articles like this on the blog at amazingwomeninhistory.com. Thank you.